Okay, honourable members, you have posed your questions. I'm sure I will allow space for the responses. I don't know, departments, have you agreed who will start first? Will it be National Treasury? Okay. You made the presentation first, then proceed. And DPSA will follow thereafter.
No, the DJ has spoken. So I must not listen. No, thanks, honourable members. And I think the questions that I hear hit actually at the heart of the issue that actually needs to be resolved. And let me start with the Honourable Mohale. What you actually have, the HOD is appointed by the Premier, right? And the HOD is appointed in terms of the Public Service Act, but then the HOD also gets his power from the PFMA to run the finances. Right? So you get the accounting officer responsibilities and that. Now, what has happened in the case of the Treasury, for example, the accounting officer responsibility has been taken away from the HOD. Virtually for the past 5 months, that HOD was just sitting there. All right? So that HOD had Public Service Act responsibilities, which could have been hiring of people, doing certain specific things. But at the end of the day, the person was just there. The question is this capacity, or is there another problem? Are the people qualified? Because that's the other question that you have asked. In the case of the Treasury, what we have seen, the HOD that is there was previously the Accountant General of the place, so he understands the finances of the place clearly. The big issue there was the first issue was management. And the issue around the interface and understanding the Treasury. It's one thing to understand one element of the job, but it's another thing to understand the full scope of the job. And what we've actually now picked up that the HOD did not have the ability to understand the full scope, basically, of the job there. So he may have been qualified in terms of what is expected from him, but then if you go a layer down from the HOD, What we have picked up, for example, some of the people who are heading resource management and the budget process, even at that level, people were not competent to be able to do their job at the end of the day. But then other parts where the HOD has shifted functions around within the organization and moved, for example, cash management away from asset and liability division and the accountant general. The provincial accountant general to the resource management person who didn't have the capability to run the place. So it's also part of a broader management problem that we've picked there. You have asked about the Free State redeployment. Now, I can say without any fear of contradiction, the Free State actually has a history of a very strong treasury. Since there was a gentleman there, Mr. Bahalo, who was there running actually the place. Now, what is happening now was there is a person who runs the budget process and was fairly strong that has been moved by the Premier into a municipality to fix the problem. So the Premier may have good intentions to say, there is this problem, but let me move this person there. Then there is another lady who was running the MFMA unit, for example, within the Treasury, who has quite a very good understanding of all of the municipalities of the province and all of the challenges faced by those municipalities and what support to give to those municipalities. And this person was now moved again out of there. And the other person now, where there's indications that the person may also be moved, was the office of the Accountant General of the province. At the end of the day. So we are really concerned that if you move the pillars of the Treasury, you may have actually quite a bit of a problem as it relates to that. The HOD of, you asking again about the HOD of the book. The HOD was there. It's not that the position was vacant. So the HOD was there, right? But did not, as I've said, understand the full gamut of the responsibility and how to manage, basically, the treasury there. And to be frank, I mean, he became a one-man show. I'll run everything at the end of the day. So things really just didn't work. Now, with the result of that, is you disempower the rest, actually, under there. But also, some of the critical positions, if I look at asset and liability, cash management, for example, there, the directors and chief directors that were responsible for that didn't have an idea of what it is and how to manage that at the end of the day. So we have quite a bit of a combination of people that are employed but didn't have the relative skills at a senior level, that were employed but didn't have the relative skills to be able to run those functions properly. So you've got a mixed bag of that. So we've done quite a bit of a HR diagnostic of the Treasury actually itself, and how to reorganize it together with the TPSA's view on how Treasury should be organized. But then it's a question of how do we place people with appropriate skills actually properly in those positions there. You are certainly right on health professionals, that the country needs these health professionals and they must be hired. We don't say they shouldn't be. But what is the issue? The key issue is there needs to be a budget to be able to employ people, right? Now, provinces are funded 97% of their revenue they get from national government with predetermined priorities for them to fund. They only generate 3% basically of their revenue. So a province must actually think about what are the national objectives, national government's view of the world, and how to then organize themselves in such a way that they meet those specific kind of objectives. Now part would be to, because we have provided for the hiring of educators and health professionals over a period of time. Now it may not have been enough, so you need to align your budget with who you hire at the end of the day. So if you don't do that, you're going to have that kind of over expenditure going there. Now you asked the question around alignment with the payment system. As I've said to you, 97% of a province's money comes from national government. Okay? Now national government collects, part of that comes from taxes, which they collect at certain intervals, and part comes from borrowing. Right? Now the tax system is, if you think about VAT, there would be specific intervals at which VAT is paid. It could be 3 or 4 times a year. If you take company tax, could be twice a year, and all of that. So what we do at national government, we look at when does money will come in, right? And then we talk to the province, all 9 provinces, and we say, look here, this is how we're going to be getting this money, and this is how we are cash flow managing at a national level. We develop what is known as a payment schedule for them, all right? And then we say, you're going to get them the equitable share, and these are the dates at which you're going to be getting them each month, all right? You're going to be getting conditional grants. These are the dates at which you're going to be getting these conditional grants, all right? We're going to borrow money, and this is how you're going to be accessing this money, all right? Then we say, here is the payment schedule. Look at it and see whether it is aligned with your needs. Now, we give the province an opportunity to say, look here, with the wage negotiations, normally payments take place in September because of the negotiations, and then they need to be back paid. There are bullet payments in September. They tell us now, no, you gave us so much, you can up it for September because we will be doing back pay. So it's quite an intricate system that we give basically to the provinces to be able to say, now, help us understand your needs, but this is how we will be giving you the money. Now, align your payment system with how the money is going to be coming in. Now, what the province did was to say, okay, we will be getting this money 2 or 3 times a month, the money will come in. But they are paying 8 times a month getting rent out of the system. So there's a misalignment, you see. So part of what we've done now is to stabilize actually that area. The Honorable Mr. Jacob, on the focus of treasuries there. Well, really when we got in, firstly, the fact that they didn't have money to meet their obligations tells you that there wasn't a cash management system actually in place. Right? So that was one of the serious kind of weaknesses, basically. The second key issue, that is an asset and liability management system within the Treasury. The second issue, which you've seen in both departments of health and education, is that it's got to do with overspending in personnel. What we're telling Treasury is, we say, no, but you as a Treasury, you don't have to need a big, have a big component, but you need somebody who understands HR matters and who understands how to budget for HR matters in all of the departments. Because we in the National Treasury have that kind of capability, and we know exactly what is happening in each of the departments at the end of the day. So if you as a province don't see it as a risk, then you have a problem. So you as a Treasury needs to build that specific capability to be able to do quite a bit of that. Then it is the issue of general financial management, which lies with the accountant general, basically there. And here I'm not talking about the CFO, because the CFO of the Treasury runs the affairs of the Treasury. But the Office of the Accountant General runs the affairs of the provincial government in terms of how financial management needs to cascade basically down to the rest of the spending agencies within the province itself, basically there. So there is where one... Now, the big issue that came through basically there was overriding certain decisions, because there are clear-cut regulations, Treasury regulations, and how to deal with supply chain that we give to provincial treasuries actually to implement. But then if an exco take a decision, for example, that says we will pay 8 times a month, or if an exco take a decision that says, look here, we're going to have PMUs to implement our program, then they are overriding actually quite of the key principles of how supply chain actually needs to be managed at the end of the day. So that was another area that we have actually picked up. The other area in the Treasury that we picked up was, in any case, the issue around budget preparation and budget management. It's easy to prepare a budget, get all of the numbers together and present it. But it is more difficult to implement, monitor and implement. Because you need to now monitor, and we've got an extensive senior monitoring system where the Treasury actually needs to use those information on a monthly basis to be able to, you know, check where the red flags are and how to intervene and support quite a bit. So there was quite a bit of the gaps there. On the GSSC, and I'll try to answer all of the questions around the GSSC, part of the rationalization of the GSSC was to take a lot of the staff that there back actually into the department. There is an element that the Treasury will retain, which has got to do with it, like internal audit functions and auditing functions, which could be best placed as a shared service that can be shared basically by the rest of the provinces. And indeed, what the GSSC has done, it has taken the accountability away from the departments, the point that you are making, Honorable Chair, because if things fail, they say, no, it's not us, it's GSSC that doesn't process this, it's GSSC that didn't do this. Now all of that responsibility actually goes back to the relevant spending department. But Honorable Chair, you've mentioned problems where people say the Treasury is the Treasury. A lot of the departments are, the main complaint with the Treasury is they don't have enough money to do their work. And it's got, there could be these other things, but they will forever come and say, Treasury didn't give us enough money for this, didn't give, and in many cases we ask them the question, no man, it's not about the money, tell us what you do for the money that you have first, and then we can see how we can support you with the rest of the other things going there. The reception, I must say, in the beginning, there was a bit of tension, and you may have followed it over the news itself. But I must say, the relationship wasn't that bad at all. I would say, in Limpopo specifically. And there are certain signals that can show you that there is progress in terms of cooperation in some of that. Firstly, if you think about the fact that the Premier said, look at this HOD in the Treasury is not helping me to solve the Treasury function, let me take him away, it tells you he cooperates, if you think about it from that perspective. The MEC for Finance tabled the budget on behalf of the Minister, and with specific instructions from the Minister without any problems, for example, right? Some of the key people who are dealing with cash and asset management are working very closely with the rest of the, not only the departments that are under administration, but with the rest of the departments in terms of how to manage their cash and that. So we start to see the interface that we wanted between the Treasury and the rest of the people. I have said EXCO as a approved the IDA phase 3, for example, 3 weeks ago at the end of the day, which shows that the ESCO wants to adopt some of the good practices that it wants the system to move forward. At an official level, we see that as we are making specific progress. I can't comment on the rest of the relationship actually there. You say the budget is as good as you read it, as it's just the numbers that are actually put together there. You've got over under expenditure. You know, how do you really match this budget basically with the need? And I think part of what I've responded to actually to your question at the end of the day. Firstly, you need to know how many teachers you need in the system. And then once you've quantified that, you know how their pay scales are, and percentile is advanced. You can actually use percentile and calculate your wage bill, basically, for that matter, at the end of the day. So those things you can basically do. If you know how many schools you will be building over the next 3 to 5 years, this is a simple thing. So you can put it together, and then you can cash flow manage quite a bit of that at the end of the day. So if you, it's more on the implementation side that we start to say, you know, do we have the right skills for this budget actually to have the desired impact at the end of the day. And part of this intervention is starting to bring that link basically together at the end of the day. If you need to build a school for 35 million, the school should be 35 million and not 50 million at the end of the day. So it is those practices that we are saying we want to start to see. If the Treasury now is thinking about price standardization, if you buy this bottle for 5 rand, it should be 5 rand. You can't buy it for 10 rand somewhere else. So there are these practices that we are starting to develop, and we will embed actually into the system. There's no reason why you should buy a photocopier for 100,000 somewhere and 10,000 somewhere else. This is the price, and this is how you will pay it. So we're looking at how we deal with supply chain, because it is indeed at the heart of the issue there, to be able to get the issue going. But I think what is important, and that the committee shouldn't lose sight of, is a lot of the health and education functions are decentralized. Right? So what is key is, once you have given the decentralized delegations, it is how do you monitor and manage those delegations at the end of the day. You can't just delegate and sit back and think things are going to work. So it's just how you get that actually sorted out that's going to be sorted out. I mean, on the HOD side, the post was filled. You've asked that question. It was filled enough. Spoken about that. On the 2.1 billion rand savings, and we're talking contract management. On contract management, some issues could be clear cut. People don't have the capability really to manage big contracts, for example. So how do you basically solve that? If you want to build a school, as I said, 35 million, why should it be 50? It means you didn't understand how to manage the contract itself. Why are the deviations at the end of the day? In some cases, it could be willful. People have the capability, but there's just this willfulness of our public service really not to do the right thing at the end of the day, going there. Now, you also asked the question, which I think I've partly answered, the root causes of the problem, which links to what you're saying, Honorable Maria, as to proactive, reactive at the end of the day. In Limpopo, we have seen this coming in June already. We have tried to help the Treasury to do certain things and institute certain measures to make this happen so that they don't face the problem that they will face. We met them in July. We spoke to them in September at the end of the day. So clearly, there wasn't this common understanding of the problem actually itself at the end of the day. And given the fact that how the Treasury was managed also created quite a bit of the problem at the end of the day on how to deal with the stuff. And the honorable members have across the board spoken about it. Corruption is at the root of the problem that we're faced with, yeah. And if we don't act on a more proactive way, find a way of solving it, we will continue to be talking here every year about actually about the same problem at the end of the day. And the Treasury nationally is not starting to awaken to the fact that, okay, you can't just give instruction all the time. You need to put measures in place to make sure that corruption is, supply chain is properly implemented at the end of the day. So certainly the announcement around the chief procurement officer, and we are now starting to rethink how the department nationally need to be reconfigured to really start to apply its mind on how to deal with that. So we are moving in that kind of direction, and to see how we can proactively start to address quite of the problems that are there. Now, I work for the Treasury now. I think this is my 14th year. And I've said this to one portfolio committee, and I was nearly chased out of it, and I'm going to say it here again. There is no consequence in government. I say, as the Deputy Director General of Intergovernmental Relations, Minister Gordon, if I don't do my work to the expectations of my job description and the performance agreement that I entered into with you and the DG, fire me. If you think about it, we had portfolio committee meetings for years. The same DGs who have ordered qualifications, who are not running their department, they still come, they are still there. Nobody is asking, but you know, you had an ordered qualification, you had this, you had that. Why are you still around? You should be fired, man. And those are the key things that must be asked. And that's at the heart. It is really at the heart of it.
You are like, you are dealing with those matters, so we're not going to.
No, you can stay as long as you want.
but frankly, that is at the heart of it. But we shouldn't forget the political interface with the system, because a lot of the problems that you see could be political. The political interface that's also not perfect, that creates quite a bit of the problems that are actually in the system. But I am confident. If I know that I can be fired, I will do the job to the best of my ability at the end of the day. On sport and recreation, I'll check the numbers, but it is impossible that they can spend their budget in 2 months. Because, let me see, it's April, May. May has just ended. It is really important for impossible for the department to have spent it.
Well, in terms of these commitments, it's gone.
No, but we will certainly follow that up. Now, on the 30-day issues, and are related to the 23 roads in the Free State, you are fully aware of it. Part of the contract entered into on the 23 roads in the Free State was each contractor must provide their own funding to build the roads. Right? So they needed to have built the roads and then hand over the roads to government. Government would pay them over 3 or 4 years, which was in any case illegal to do. Right? Now, these contractors couldn't raise the money on their own, so they were violating the contract already in the first place. So government can't say, now I'm changing the contract to a progress payment, because government didn't budget basically for it at the end of the day. Now, part of how we want to resolve is the due diligence that DBSA and Sunrail is doing there, and then we can find a way of aligning that with the resources and find resources to be able to start to settle that. At the end of the day, I think, Honourable Manana, the issues that I've raised are the issues that you have raised. The issue around consequence and how to really deal with that. And Honourable Chair, I think on the collapse side, I've animated already on some of that. But you are certainly right. If we can start to deal with the supply chain management part of this, I think we will make quite, it will not be 100%, but we will certainly make huge progress in dealing with it. In terms of the other provinces, if you are asking in relation to other provinces or other departments that are not under administration, it's other provinces. In terms of the other provinces. Western Cape, clearly the Treasury is functional and its administration is functional. If you take KZN, and what helped in the case of KZN was Premier Mkhize was MEC for finance before he came. So clearly the Premier understands if the Treasury works, the rest of the building blocks will actually fall basically in place. And in his case, his health department there faced similar challenges that the Gauteng health department was facing. 3 or 4 years ago. And they have turned it around in 2 years. In 2 years. He instructed that the Treasury place key people in that health department and really just to go in and root out whatever needs to be rooted out, basically. In that. So what is important is that premier leadership, not take over, but allowing the system actually to do its job and provide the support for it, actually do. So on the KZN side, we are fairly okay that things are going to be working. Northern Cape, except for the Department of Health, the Treasury itself is fairly strong. Except for the Department of Health, which the Treasury on a continuous basis trying to support them. They've got problems. The CFO may leave them in the health department, so it's how they want to intervene and help that department there. In Northwest, when MEC Mabo was the MEC for Finance before she was reshuffled, clearly in our interface with her, we indicated to her, look here, number one, there are three or so key positions that you actually need to fill. If you fill those positions with the right people, certainly you will have a bit of stability actually in your finances. So one of those positions was, in any case, budget preparation and budget management, which they've actually got somebody from the Free State, which they've recruited and who's actually doing an excellent job there. The other one was the Office of the Accountant General in the province that oversees the entire financial management aspects of it, which is working well. The third issue is actually on infrastructure management, which we are supporting them basically on. So a lot of work still needs to be done in the Northwest, but they are fairly controlling their financial environment. We can confidently say that they are fairly controlling the financial environment. The Eastern Cape Treasury knows its business. In fact, when Cabinet took a decision to intervene last year in the Department of Education, it is amazing. It was just possibly a week before the Treasury would have, in any case, taken a decision to take over. The information that the Treasury had about what is happening in the department and how to fix it, it was really just amazing at the end of the day. So the Treasury itself is fairly well capacitated. We have also placed people there in the Treasury to allow the Treasury basically to actually execute its PFMA constitutional responsibilities. So if you take Gauteng, except for health, the Treasury is also fairly functioning. Quite okay, and they don't find, if you think about it, the fact that the Treasury could release about close to 2 billion last year to deal with their accruals tells you that they know where the money is and how to deal with their finances. They've got commitments on Gautrain, for example, and the repayment. They've budgeted for those things. So if you look at the quality of their budget, you can say they know how to deal with the issue. So we are quite confident that we are not complacent. We are confident that, look at they, but we are pushing them to make sure that the right capacities are actually put in place for them to deal with that. On the NHLS, Honourable Chair, the NHLS, you are right that it needs to be paid on time. It needs to and this is what we've indicated to all of the provinces there. But on the NHLS itself, if you take KZN, there has been a dispute. We have appointed a judge to be able to look at the dispute actually around it. The dispute arose in the main around their pricing, and secondly around the fact that they're using facilities of the government, but they're charging as if they're not using those facilities. So it's a number of issues in NHLS. That's basically there. But in the main, there could be a pricing issue as well, because what Gauteng is saying, but you know, our bill is doubling. What is happening here? So there is, we need to fully scrutinize what is happening actually within NHLS itself to be able to make sure that we actually get value for money there. You've mentioned Steve Biko. Now, we have changed the equitable share formula in such a way that if, especially the health part of it, if we've moved it because in the past we had people with or without medical aid informing resource allocations for help. Now we're moving towards utilization rate. If you use the system, you get paid for the burden that you need to carry. Okay. So if people from Mpumalanga, for example, use Steve Biko quite a lot, we assess the data, the usage data within Steve Biko, which means the usage data will be higher, the province will have to get more money. In Mpumalanga, the usage data of the health facilities will be lower, which means the resources going to the province will have to be less at the end of the day. So when we allocate the money, we're taking that into account. But that doesn't solve the problem. What you need to solve the problem is to make sure that all of the health facilities are actually functioning properly so that the people don't incur a cost to travel from one province to another to be able to. And if you do an analysis, by the way, of Steve Biko, you're going to see the services that the people are getting from Steve Biko are actually services that should be provided by a clinic somewhere in Mpumalanga, even by a clinic within Gauteng itself, you see. So it's the entire system actually needs to be fixed to be able to deal with it. I hope I've answered all of the questions. If they are not, I mean, I'm more than willing to go over them again. Thank you.
Thanks. Can I ask DPSA?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Because I'm accompanied by colleagues here who are involved in these interventions themselves, I'm going to ask them to deal with some of the issues. The questions raised by the Honorable Mohale on personal cleanup, Ledule will deal with that. She's the one driving that process. I know that Kenneth has dealt with the issue of the reception for the intervention team, particularly with respect to the to Limpopo. Siyabonga is involved in the Eastern Cape one, and I'm going to ask him also just to make a comment on that, based particularly on the Eastern Cape experience around the reception of the team, and then I'll ask Colette Clark to speak to the issues raised by the Honourable Ditor around the filling of posts. How do we know if a filled post matches the job requirements and the skills of the incumbent, and some of the skills issues that have been raised, and then thereafter I'll just make a few comments on some of the other questions that have been raised. Lidule, if I could ask you, through you, Chairperson, to go first.
Thank you, Chair. The first question relates to how sure are we that the quality of data will be migrated as clean as possible to the proposed IFMS system. Our point of departure is really around the business rules of PESA. The quality of data that we deal with is related to the business rules. So in our process of cleaning data, we have identified several discrepancies where you find officials without surname, officials without identification, and obviously that is non-compliant to the business rules of the system. So we are looking at each and every department to identify all those discrepancies. We are not only looking at the vacancy rate and how long it takes for a department to fill a vacant position, but you are looking at the crucial information that really needs to be used for planning and decision making. The other thing that we do is we are continuing to assess the quality of data and as readiness assessment tool towards migration to the system. And we are using 2011 as the baseline because we started in 2011 August. And now we are comparing the data that we are getting, the quality of data that we are getting now, and compare it with the data, the original data as baseline that we got in August. But we are also utilizing the Auditor General in terms of performing some audits on the data, on the quality of data that we have. Statistics South Africa has also come on board to assist us to look at the quality of data that we have so that at the end of the day we can confidently say we have 100% compliance to the quality of data that we have. And lastly, what we do through our DG's forum is to give the reports. We have the early warning system that we call the Public Management Watch System. It really gives a warning to those departments in terms of the indicators that we had set for ourselves, maybe like, for instance, the sick leave management, the vacancy rate. And we send them on a quarterly basis to all the HODs and the DG's. and therefore we monitor the implementation plans that arise out of that. The other key monitoring tool that we use is around the human resource strategic report. It also looks at, you know, what, you know, overall what a department is doing in terms of HR management. And we also send this report to the HODs and the DGs, and we follow it up. But as we say, we will continue to assess the level of quality of personal information until such time that IFMS is in place. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in responding to Honorable Nyakembe's question on reception, I will also attempt to respond to Honorable Dutoy's question on sustainability. I think one thing we've learned in the experience in the Eastern Cape is that information is key. If people are without information, obviously they will formulate their own conclusions, which might unsettle them in some instances. We had a benefit of Minister Angie Motshekga coming down to meet with the MEC. We had a joint presentation by both of the principals, which basically shed a light on the issues that were not properly understood by provincial officials. We've got the DPSA convened a task team, and the Eastern Cape Education is secretariat to the task team. I think that addresses issues of sustainability where in the past, I think 3 or 4 interventions were to go in and out of the province, and then systems starts to collapse again. In this instance, Chair, the acting SG who was appointed by the province has made resources available to all work streams under the DPSA task team to make sure that there is sustainability in all the work streams which are led by either the DPSA, the Department of Basic Education, and the Office of the Premier. And we have partnered also with the Office of the Premier in making sure that whatever we come up with, it's not only Pretoria looking at things from a macro level, but also it's informed by day-to-day issues happening not only at head office, but at districts. I think, as Honorable Manana was saying, we are slowly turning the corner in making sure that we partner rather than impose ourselves to the province. I think that's...
Thanks. I will respond to the aspects of our mandate around the shared services centres as well as the aspect of the skills. Just to indicate that in 2006 there was a necessity from the Minister for Public Service and Administration to put out a directive because of the proliferation of corporate forms, including shared services centres. And in many instances, there were no feasibility studies in terms of whether there should be a shared services or not. Now, DPSA is playing a central role in terms of if a department would request such a corporate form. The dilemma that we've analysed from a functional analysis is that the business model of a shared services comes from the private sector. The legislation in terms of what exists vests the accountability with the accounting officer or the EA. The EA in terms of the Public Service Act and the accounting officer in terms of the PFMA. Rightfully, as Treasury stated, you cannot delegate accountability. Also in terms of the two pieces of legislation, you can only delegate downwards and only to an official. Now, with shared services and the problems that the Auditor General has picked up is the lack of accountability and responsibility for how decisions are made by officials who do not have direct line reporting to the relevant accounting officer or to the relevant executive authority. And hence there was a problem in relation to accountability. When we do an analysis for departments, we look at high-level skills in terms of their request. The communications, ICT, legal, and audit in many instances do lend themselves quite easily for the shared services because of the nature of skills that you're looking for. But the authority and the responsibility around functions in the corporate services space, especially within the finance and the HR, that are vested either with the EA or with the AO, for us those do not lend themselves for shared services for a number of reasons. As the economies of scale and the threshold as well as the volumetrics for larger departments like education and health, there's no reason why you should be having that on a shared services basis. But if you've got very, very small departments from a cost-benefit analysis, there may be a justification in terms of when you're doing a work-study analysis of what employees would be doing in relation to those functions, it may lend themselves, but that would be in an absolute unique instance. So for us, the corporate form called a shared services, in terms of the current legislative framework, is creating accountability problems. And that is the analysis that both the AG and ourselves have picked up. And we advise departments accordingly if they are wanting to go that particular route. So the ones that were established before the directive of 2006, clearly the GSCC being a case in point, any decisions at that provincial level in terms of the current legislation would be done in engagement with the Premier's office in terms of whatever decisions they want to do to manage the recommendations from the Auditor General. That being said, the other aspect was regards to how do you know whether the person that you're recruiting meets the requirements for the position. We introduced as DPSA the HR Connect system, and one of the key outcomes of the HR Connect was to tag every single biographical piece of data of every employee that has been employed, that's post-employment, to tag all the competencies of the post in that particular relevant department, then to match the person to the post and to do an analysis of the gap, the skills gap, and the competency gap that has been put on every single, on what we're calling the job profile and the job dictionary, dictates what the expectation of the post is, and therefore the personal development plan of the individual is then the gap between what is expected of the post and what the incumbent has got. And that is for people that have already been employed. Now, going forward, in order to employ the correct people, would be ensuring that in the recruitment process from the HR Connect system, the profile in terms of the core competencies and the process competencies have been met by the individual who is actually applying for that particular position. At the moment, we do have a competency framework which is only compulsory for the senior management service, and that is the desired process in terms of matching the core and process competencies of the position with the person coming in for the position. You cannot be recruited as an SMS in the public service if you did not go through a competency assessment validated by ourselves and the appointed service providers who have gone through a very, very strenuous validation process in order to be the ones, as the psychologists and the psychometrists, that are administering the competency assessment for senior managers. Thanks.
Chairperson, if I could just end off with just two or three responses to some of the outstanding issues. The question raised by the Honourable Mohale around what was included in the presentation around outdated ICT infrastructure and ICT governance in the provinces. There are two sides to this. The one is that given the stage where the project is at in terms of doing a full assessment of what is in the departments in the province, the intervention hasn't necessarily involved CETA at this stage, but as a matter of course, as we get to the stage where we are talking about upgrading the infrastructure so that it's much more updated, institutions such as CETA will have to play a very critical role in this process as part of the mandate that they have in this regard. But I should just add also that the governance issues raised in the presentation are being addressed through a process which the Auditor General has flagged in the past, that there isn't a public service-wide ICT governance framework. So that when you go into departments and do an audit on the quality of ICT governance, you don't have a public service-wide norms that you can use as a basis for auditing governance of ICT in the department. And that matter was brought to the attention of DPSA as a responsible department. We are at a stage where DPSA, working together with the Council of Government IT Officers, have put in place a draft public service-wide ICT governance framework. It has also been taken through the governance and administration cluster of FOSAT, and we are at a stage where we will be approaching cabinet for that framework to be approved so that it can be used public service-wide. affects the capacity of DPSA. A few months ago, when we presented to the Portfolio Committee on the strategic plan of DPSA, among the issues we emphasized around our role was that we have a responsibility for making sure that there is an enabling policy environment within the public service for a range of things to be achieved: service delivery planning, implementation, human resource management, and so on and so on, as well as ICT. And we have a responsibility for ensuring that we support departments in the implementation of these policies, and that support normally takes the form of guidelines that we produce. The support normally takes the form of workshops that we conduct with departments, and in some instances, some one-on-one interactions with departments to support them towards the implementation of these policies. Now, the interventions are different, because what they require is much more than that, where you take a team of people and you then deploy them in a department, in a province, for a certain period of time. Naturally, that affects the capacity of the department, because our planning was not based on us assigning people to departments on a semi-full-time basis, away from their areas of responsibility. Now, the Honourable Nyakembe says, if it happens in a few other departments in other provinces, will we be able to cope? Certainly, it will then have profound implications for the capacity of DPSA. And I would imagine not only DPSA, but then a department like Treasury as well, because that's not how we are organized. If you look at one example, which relates to the area of discipline management, the stage where we are at now in our support processes, there are investigations that are being conducted. But the time will come where we get to processes of administrative processes of hearings, presiding officers, employer representatives, all those kinds of issues, which will place a strain on the capacity of the department. And already here we're saying that we will have to rely on the assistance of other departments, but also in terms of the strategic plan we presented to this committee, we've also made provision as part of this year's budget, the creation of a centralized pool where we are able to draw capacity from outside the public service so that we can assist with the fast-tracking of these kinds of cases. The question that relates to how many people have been held accountable, how many people have been disciplined, I think at this stage we have at least a database of cases that have been identified where investigations are proceeding. And as I've already indicated, there will be processes depending on whether people are found to have indeed been in conflict with the law, where criminal proceedings will have to be pursued, and in other cases where it will just be cases of misconduct where disciplinary functions will have to be imposed upon the people that have been identified. I think it's only fair that we let these processes unfold so that the outcome thereof will then determine what kind of sanctions get imposed on these people. But I would like to agree with the Honourable Manana on the matter of attitude. Because clearly where the attitude is right, there is resilience, there is resourcefulness, there is passion, there is commitment. And we've got many examples where institutions like schools, in the midst of limited resources, are still able to perform very well. But exactly because of this issue that the Honourable Manana is raising, of passion, of attitude. But where the attitude is wrong, even where there is abundance of resources, the resources will not be used appropriately. So in terms of the work at the level of the administration, the executive, and at the level of legislatures, I think it is important that we keep focus on these important matters that relate to making sure that the people that get employed and the manner in which people are being supported and the manner in which people are being held accountable take these matters into consideration. We have a program in DPSA on Batho Pele Change Engagement Program that annually
runs a range of workshops for provincial and national departments. But support alone is not going to be enough to help us deal with these issues. For me, I think support must go hand in hand with accountability. If we support you, but there isn't another process of making sure that you're actually valuing the support that you're receiving by the way in which you're being held accountable by the system at the level of the executive and at the level of the legislatures, then we're not going to be able to adequately address these kinds of challenges that that we are raising. And I think it links to the question the Honourable Mare raised around, and I hope I'm quoting correctly when he says, how do you know that you don't know what you don't know? the process of determining training needs in the public service is very clear. That at the level of the department where I am working with you directly, you've been giving a certain responsibilities, and I know where you're performing well and where you're not performing well. So we should collectively then say, this is the progress you have made. These are the areas of further development that we should address. And those get captured as part of the personal development plan annually. And the personal development plans can then be used as a basis for developing a workplace skills plan, which can in turn contribute towards the sector skills plan. Now, if these processes are not done correctly, and then we have an institution such as Palama that is supposed to provide the training, then we're creating a problem for Palama. Because we are basically saying, Palama, you are the one who should be responsible for making the correct assessment of the skills needs in the institution. And if that is the responsibility of Palama, then what about the responsibilities that we have in our department, as the legislation provides for? That because I'm your supervisor, I am best located to monitor your work and engage with you around areas of development. So, and I think if we address these matters of in the presentation, the issues of leadership and management were raised, those are the matters that we should be dealing with. And accountability, exactly, that we should be dealing with. And because if we do that, then we are able to close all these other gaps that have been raised. And I think those are the issues just that I just wanted to add to, and in addition to the contributions that have been made by colleagues. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Okay, I'm sure we'd like to pursue these matters further, but unfortunately, because of time, I want to start by apologizing to other members that I know they had to attend another meeting that has started at 12:30. I really apologize. You can realize that these matters were, core issues that we'd like to discuss. But like I indicated, it's not a once-off and it's gone. We do have a follow-up in this instance on these matters. We're still going to be with these departments, both of them, on this issue of identified of oversight. The departments are also part of it. And just to indicate, it's both the departments, public say, in the portfolio committees, would either have would be joined by education or by health, depending which area did Parliament approve. The Public Service Commission, the Auditor General, and the Premier's committees in the provinces, that includes the public accounts and local government as well. And therefore, we will be working on this program, we'll be communicating all of us, and we will still work on this matter until we actually delve to the core of the matter. I would really wouldn't like to delay the members further. I know I've taken your time, but we also started a bit late.
Just one point maybe for Treasury, and I think this is very relevant. Somehow they can give us an indication until what time will they still be in the provinces, or are they leaving them?
Okay.
I think this is very relevant.
Do you have a quick question? Because what we need to say is that we take it, if it's a process, we'll also get responses once we are on those hearings down there. Do you have a quick response on that?
There we will be guided by the Constitution. The NCOP has approved it, and we'll be giving regular feedback to the NCOP, and based on that, and the feedback to Cabinet, and then they will decide on how to proceed.
Okay.
So we can't say. Yeah. No, I can't say whether it's now or...
Yes. Okay, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. I think it was a fruitful meeting. We will proceed with this matter. Meeting adjourned.
Okay.